Welcome everyone to the July meeting of the Instructional Leadership Directors Roundtable. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and I'm honored to be joined today by my longtime friend, Jethro Jones of Transformative Principal. You may know Jethro from his podcast, which has more than 300 episodes. You may know him from his writing. His new book is School X on Designing the School Experience. And we're here today to talk about his model for asynchronous culture essentials. Jethro, welcome to the roundtable.
Hey, thanks. I'm so excited to be here and always a pleasure chatting with you. And thanks to everybody who's showing up today.
Yeah, and thank you to our panelists. Let me know if you would like to come on camera at any time. Welcome Rachel and Heather, and feel free to use the chat to chime in anytime and get on camera as well if you prefer. So we're here today to talk about establishing a school culture, establishing a kind of tone for the year as we normally do in person, right? We normally convene people at the beginning of the year. Maybe we sit in the library for a couple of days and do, good old in-service, or maybe we have variations on that model. Maybe we have some time when people are working in teams, working in their classrooms. But since time immemorial, we have relied as a profession on gathering people together in person, starting at the district level where we have administrators come together at the central office, meet with the superintendent and the senior leadership cabinet and get a direction for the year, get updated training and professional development and operational details, largely in person. And I think we've all been in that situation where we've said, you know what, this meeting or this part of the meeting could have been an email. And I think we've seen the profession make some good shifts into protecting that in-person time so that what we're doing in that face-to-face setting really is valuable and really is worth the trouble to get together in person, knowing that that time is scarce. But this year, that face-to-face time is not only scarce, it may actually be non-existent. So we're here today with Jethro Jones to talk about what we can do as school leaders, both at the district and at the school level, to establish culture and establish tone for the year and get things off to a good start, even if we are not meeting in person. So Jethro, set that up for us a little bit. What are some of the big rocks that we need to be thinking about when it comes to establishing culture for the year, knowing that we may not be able to meet in person, or it may not be a good idea to meet in person?
I think the first thing is recognizing that we need to do things asynchronously, and we need to start thinking about building culture asynchronously. And how do you do that? And when we're meeting in person, when we're doing stuff together all the time, we're very good at building culture in schools for good reason or for bad reason, or good culture or bad culture, we build it regardless. And so what's really important is that we take the time thinking about what that culture looks like when we do it asynchronously, when we can't be together. And typically, as you mentioned, we get together and we talk and we, have breakfast or lunch together or whatever, but those things just aren't possible. So I have a few ideas of things that you can do, but every school is different and every school has their own strengths and weaknesses. And so really you've got to figure some things out on your own. But I will tell you what makes a huge impact on helping people build culture is helping them know that they matter and that they're important to the organization. And that goes for students, for teachers, for other staff, for the custodian, for everybody in between. Anybody who's coming into that school virtually or physically needs to know that they matter and that they're important. So that would be the first place to start. And as I was talking about this idea of what specific action teachers could take and school leaders could take this fall that would have a bigger impact than anything else, that would be when you give a teacher a class list, also give them time during their workday, not having Zoom meetings or anything like that, but give them time during the day to contact every single family that they're teaching. If they're in middle school or high school, that could be upwards of 200 kids, but they need to contact all those people and ask them what they need. If they do that one simple specific action that will take a lot of time, then they're going to set the culture of we're here to serve you. We're not here to teach curriculum. We're here to teach your child. And that's going to pay huge dividends down the road.
Wow, that's, you know, such a straightforward and yet easy to overlook step, because it's something we've never done before, right? I would say the vast majority of schools do not have a one-on-one outreach. You know, we have an open house, we say, come to us, we send you a letter, we send you a text, we send you an email. But the idea of actually going somewhat old school and picking up the phone and calling each individual family and saying, you matter. I think that is a starting point of the relationship, you know, saying, you matter, we value you, we are here for you, we are here to serve your child. I think there's a powerful message there that in the past, perhaps we've just assumed that people pick that up from the way we do things. But this is a year of intentionality. Like everything I keep coming across says to me that intentionality really is the watchword for this year, that we have to, as you say in your book, School X, design the experience. And if parents are not going to be coming up to the school for open house, we need to design. It doesn't necessarily need to be something fancy. It doesn't need to be some video production or Zoom meeting or anything like that. It can be as simple as a phone call. I wanted to, before we move on from this, this might seem like a minor issue, but you mentioned briefly, just as we were getting started, the idea that often in our in-service, in our kind of welcoming people back, there's food. There's a meal that's shared. We get breakfast. Maybe I used to get, I was a principal in North Seattle and there was a Panera Bread nearby. So we used to get bagels and cream cheese and coffee and, you know, just those little rituals that make people feel a little bit special. You know, like you don't get breakfast, provided for you every week or every day. So there's something special about having food, and there's something that kind of brings people together about having food together. And yet we know that's kind of a bad idea from a health perspective in the current moment. What are some things we should be thinking about whenever we're losing the opportunity to engage in one of those familiar patterns? When we know something is suddenly off the table, what do we need to be thinking about as leaders who are designing an experience for other people?
Yeah, you know, I think that the real focus you need to have is, what is it about having food that makes the culture build? And I think most of the time it's that when you're eating, you're pretty relaxed and you're pretty vulnerable. And so there's not a structured, like, this is what we have to do with eating. Like everybody has to do it in the same way. It's not like that. It's usually a relaxed time where you can chit chat, talk, get to know each other, things like that. And so you need to find a way to recreate that time in a virtual or asynchronous way. You need to find ways to help people get to know each other and be supportive of each other in different ways, and to get to know each other. And I'm not going to lie, it's really, really hard to do that, especially when, as a school leader, you have a list of things that you need to get through and you need to make sure you cover all these things. And there's so much information that needs to be handed out. But to be honest, most of that stuff doesn't matter nearly as much as making sure the people around you feel like they matter and that they're important. So I would say, try to set up some structures where you can do some more relaxed things to help build culture, build community in your school, even over Zoom or whatever tool you're using, so that you can still have that kind of interaction. If you don't think about this ahead of time and don't design the experience beforehand, then you're going to do it how you've always done it. And if you do it how you've always done it, it's not going to work well, because we can't do things how we've always done them in this environment. So we've got to design something different and make sure that things are much better. I want to talk a little bit about that calling all the parents, because a few years ago, I interviewed a guy named Rob Carroll for my podcast, Transformative Principal, and he said that he went and visited the parents, the families of all the students before school started. And I thought, you know, that sounds really cool. So we did that at my school in Kodiak, and it was amazing. And what I learned from that was that people care that you make the extra effort to go and see them. Now, going and visiting everybody right now may not be a great idea, so probably don't do that, but do call them all on the phone. But then think about what you as the principal can do to help support families and your teachers in this time as well. What kinds of things can you do to say, I care about you personally, and I'm here for you, and I want to support you? What kinds of things can you do to go out and make sure that people know that? Now, if we bring up the idea of food, it is possible that you could send a DoorDash delivery of breakfast to everybody's house. And that would probably be difficult to organize and do. But if somebody got a hot breakfast sandwich right as they were starting their meeting and it interrupted the meeting and they had to go get it and they came back, how excited would they be that they just got breakfast delivered to their house? That would be amazing. It would take money, it would take time and energy, but I think the result would be that people would know that they were cared for, and that would make a huge difference to them.
You know, the one thing that strikes me from this discussion so far is the idea of efficiency versus meaning versus, you know, versus connection. And it, you know, if we look at the way we normally do things in schools, so much is driven by efficiency concerns, right? Like, it is efficient for me to drive a couple blocks over to Panera, get a whole bunch of bagels and a couple of big things of coffee. You know, there's not a lot of cost. There's not a lot of time wasted in that. And we've grown accustomed to that efficiency and seen it as really, you know, just the way we have to do things. But I feel like there's a tension now between efficiency and really connecting with people and really letting people know that they matter, and to think about principals visiting every single family over the summer and, you know, and making that personal connection. I will say personally, we have people come to our door for various things, you know, just to drop things off. Maybe, you know, if you buy something from a store in town, a lot of times, you know, people know each other, people will deliver. I have to say, this summer, it has been almost the highlight of our week to have a familiar face that we haven't seen in months knock on the door, and they usually just have a bag and say, "Hey, I'm just here to drop this off." But those are the things we will not forget. You know, those are the highlights. And I think any kind of experience like that, that, you know, even if it's somewhat costly, even if it's somewhat inefficient to deliver, you know, relationships are not inherently efficient. Like, we don't ask for efficiency in our relationships. That's just not one of the metrics that we, you know, judge them by. We don't say, well, this relationship only takes me 7 minutes a week to maintain, so it's a good, like, we don't think that way, right? So how do we reframe for ourselves the, you know, the benefit of investing our time in any particular, you know, type of activity? You know, knowing that we have perhaps more work than ever to do, more email to answer, more people who have more questions for us than ever. How do we make sense of that kind of time issue in all of this?
Yeah, you know, we really have to recognize that it's not about time, it's about the relationship. And that's really hard for us to do because we've been trained as educators to not do things that way. We've been trained to be efficient. We've been trained to be focused on making sure that we, you know, impact the most number of students that we can, not, you know, go to the one child and make sure we support them. And that's really what we need to start doing. We need to do that more than anything else, because that's what everybody's going to remember from this. So I've heard a lot of teachers online on Twitter and in Facebook groups and stuff talking about how, you know, we haven't been trained for this kind of an event. And I agree, that is 100% true. But what we do know, and every time I give a speech or do consulting or anything with a large group of people, I always ask this question: what is the thing that you remember about the teacher that you remember, like the teacher? And it is always that they made me feel special. And nobody remembers the grades they got, the scores they got, unless they were particularly awful or something like that. Those are the things that people really remember. And so how do we help kids know that we're paying attention to them individually and that they matter to us? How do we help our staff know that we're paying attention to them individually? We have to take the time. And your job as a principal this year is not to do anything efficiently, but to do everything based on relationships and culture and supporting people. If you can do that, then you're going to have a much different year and a very positive year. So when I, when the shutdowns first happened, I was principal of two schools, a homeschool program and a prison program. And the prison program was for kids who were incarcerated in Alaska. Now, I approached those two staffs differently. And I didn't do this intentionally, but this is just how it worked out. And I was so fascinated by what I learned, because it didn't take long for me to see how different things were. With the homeschool, I called the secretary every single day and checked in and said, how are you doing? What are you working on? What do you need help with? She'd been there for years, did not need any help at all. A few weeks ago, she texted me and said, I miss talking to you. And I had already left and moved on. And that was a big deal to me because she knew that I cared about her as a person. The prison school, not intentionally, but they were very small. They just didn't need a lot of support. And so I did not contact them very much and did not build that good relationship with them. When I left the homeschool, they were very sad. They said, we're going to miss you. You've been a great leader. When I left the prison school, they said, okay, bye. and that was pretty much it. And, you know, you as a school leader, you're trying to make an impact and trying to do something to help people, but it doesn't always work out that way. And sometimes it can be really, really challenging to do that. But when I took the time with the homeschool program, it made an impact. They felt that I cared about them, and that was all that they cared about. They didn't care about anything else that I could have done. They could care that I spent the time to talk with them and to meet with them. And so with the teachers that were there and everybody on staff, I just took the time to stay connected. And, you know, that makes a big difference. It's a very small thing, but it makes a big difference in people's lives.
Well, I love that that daily phone call. And of course, that will be familiar to anyone who's used to having a daily, you know, meeting with your office staff. You might say, okay, let's get a game plan for the day. Let's talk about what's going on and get on the same page about that. And I think if we're not intentional, again, that kind of watchword for the year, intentionality, it's going to be easy for specific issues to pop up and demand our time every day and prevent those kind of consistent, frequent, but maybe kind of casual interactions from taking place. You know, if we're used to just checking in casually with people, I think we're going to be surprised by how much more intentional we have to be because those casual interactions just aren't happening. You know, we're not running into each other in the hallway, we're not passing each other in the parking lot, that kind of thing. Thinking about maintaining relationships with staff. Obviously, you know, office staff and being able to do those check-ins, you know, on a frequent basis, obviously that's very important. Who else do we need to be thinking about in terms of relationships and what might be some of the, you know, the differences based on people's role in terms of the experience that we want to design for different types of, you know, people in different types of positions around campus?
Yeah, so I think one of the places that is overlooked by society in general are special education aides. They do a huge amount of work. And so my oldest daughter has Down syndrome, and she relied on those aides a ton, and they were with her all the time. And when she got to do a video call with one of the aides, it was like the best thing in the world. And she was so excited about it because those are the people that our kids have really built relationships with. And so when it comes to the specialists that you have in your building that are working with kids, but maybe, you know, they're unfortunately going to be the ones that didn't have a lot to do during the spring, and maybe we don't have a plan for them this fall, I would suggest we find a way to ensure that they are able to still participate and still do things with our kids to support them. And that would be really, really beneficial. It's not easy to figure that stuff out. And, you know, in the prison school, for example, we had a tutor who worked a lot with the kids, but there was no mechanism in place for her to do anything during the time that school was out because she just was not, there just wasn't a way for her to interact because we weren't Zooming with the kids. They had to do packets because they couldn't access the internet. And that was really challenging. On the other hand, the tutor in the homeschool program, she was able to, you know, same role, but in a different school and different setup, she was able to schedule online tutoring sessions with kids right away and get started doing that and continue those relationships that they had with her, which was really beneficial for those kids to have that support from her as well. So think about the different positions and what they contribute to the school, and then find a way to help them be involved and stay involved, even if it's not traditional. You know, custodians do a lot more than just clean the building. They build relationships with kids. They help kids out, and they need to have a role as well and know that they're still valued, even if there aren't kids physically in the building the whole time.
Yeah, very well said. Very well said. Heather, did you want to jump in on this? Because I know you have quite a few aides working in your school.
Thanks, Justin. Hey, Jethro. Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
One of the things I've written down a lot here, but designing an experience. I don't know which one of you said that, but I loved that piece. And so I've made a big chart while you've been chatting. And in our situation in New Brunswick, Canada, we are planning to go back to school in September. We actually went back in June with just the adults in our building, so they did a trial run. In September, we're coming back, and our K to five children are in bubbles. So the idea is you're 15 kids in a bubble, and you'll do everything in your homeroom with your homeroom teacher. Other teachers can come in, other adults can come in, but you can't mix with other kids. So our process piece is what's confusing for us. It's not going to change tons of what goes on in the classroom per se. So I'm thinking of designing that experience, not only for parents, because we're not allowed to let parents in our building. So we want to be invitational and supportive and welcoming. So we're thinking of how can we do an outside activity before school starts that would sort of translate to our welcome back barbecue we'd normally do. We're also thinking a lot about how to be intentional, use three words, Justin: consistent, frequent, casual, with all of our staff when we're all intended to stay in our space. You know, even the idea of me wandering around doing walkthroughs, it would be appropriate to a point, but to interact with kids one-on-one with the teacher at the time. So what are your thoughts about if you're in the school setting, we're socially distanced, we're keeping our space from our other bubbles, how can we do that kind of casual, consistent sort of drive-by conversations, if you will, that we would have had at the mailbox, at the water cooler, at the photocopier, and now we're making those all solitary activities?
Yeah, I think that is so challenging to try to figure out how to replicate those kinds of things. And my advice would be to not try to replicate those experiences, but try to create them in other ways, right? So instead of, you know, you have a casual conversation at the mailbox or as somebody comes around, you know, that's all well and good. But you can't really do that anymore because you kind of need to like stay away from each other. So you're going to say hi and move on, right? So I would say things like texting the people, not just during the school day, but like off hours, and talking about things that are not related to school. And, you know, make that a commitment that you're going to use email for specific school required information, but you're going to be a friend and use texting or Marco Polo or WhatsApp or whatever else there is to build those relationships with people and refuse to talk about school stuff in there. If school comes up, say, that's great. Why don't you email that to me and we'll talk about that, because I want you to know that this text communication that we're having is so that you know that I care about you as a person and that I'm not trying to use this to command you to do anything. And, you know, getting a text from your principal can sometimes, you know, make your heart skip a beat, but it can also, when you have a relationship with that person, it can be a really fantastic thing. And I got to that point with a couple of my supervisors, where we became friendly with each other through text. And I gotta say that made a huge difference, because then I felt like I could approach them more with the challenges that I was facing as a school leader.
Thank you. That makes a lot of sense. I like that sort of separating the water cooler talk from the feedback and the other kinds of conversations we'd be having from an instructional leadership perspective. Those are great. Thank you for that. And using lots of different apps. Justin, you and I had that conversation earlier around, you know, is it going to be Slack or Voxer or what kind of other technology could we use in this time to still communicate most effectively?
Yeah. Thank you. And real quickly on that technology piece, one of the apps that I've used for many, many years is called Basecamp, which is a project management app. And what's so good about it is that it was designed for asynchronous work. And so you can use Basecamp and you can get a discount as an educator, or it might even be free. But it is a tool that I absolutely love, allows you to be super flexible on how you do things. I've used it with students, with staff, for our leadership team, for our committees. There's so much great stuff in there. If you'd like to have me back another time, Justin, I can do a little demo of how I use it. That would be great. One of my friends who's a federal programs director uses it for all the committees. And what's good is that you don't have to have like a school district email to use that tool. Whereas like with Google Docs, if you don't have the school district email, it just gets a little more complicated in sharing and things like that. So this is a great way to, you know, bring a lot of different voices in and do it asynchronously. And there are things to build culture built into that as well.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah, this is a great discussion, because I feel like we need to separate some things that have been kind of all lumped together in, you know, a meeting. Like, we have a team meeting. We're going to do the work in the team meeting. Some of the work we'll do on our own, and then we'll come back to the team meeting. But I think we really need to do some deep thinking about what needs to happen asynchronously, what needs to happen in an actual meeting. And I think those project management tools and communication tools can really make a difference. One thing that we do just internally at the Principal Center is any kind of work that needs to get done does go into an asynchronous kind of project management system. And I do not personally want to invest the time of saying, okay, today at 9 o'clock, you are going to work on this, you're going to work on that. You know, I think the bottlenecks that get created by having to kind of make everything synchronous and organized and specified really become a problem at any kind of scale. So one of the things that I've become very comfortable with is just saying, you know, this particular thing needs to get done. Here's some information about it. Here's when it needs to be done by. But people have a lot of flexibility in terms of when they actually, you know, what they work on in what order. And we don't have to sit down in a meeting. We don't have to have a Zoom call to talk about just some little thing that's already in that system. And yet in education, I feel like we're not really used to that idea of asynchronous work. I wonder, Jethro, if we could talk a little bit about the norms around meetings and doing work face-to-face versus asynchronously in a tool like Basecamp, because this is new. What do you feel like are some of the considerations that leaders need to think about? And I want to especially bring back to mind the needs of district leaders who are working with principals. Of course, it's very difficult to get principals together, very expensive to get principals together. What are some ways that we can change the way we think about asynchronous work in order to be more adaptive for the circumstances that we're in?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this idea, because I think there's so much power in asynchronous work that we just have not tapped into. So one of the things that I've done for years is had like an ongoing commentary on using Basecamp of ideas that we could percolate on and let them sit for a bit and then come back to them as time went on. And so in Dufour's PLC model, there are things need to be loose on and things need to be tight on. So that's the same with asynchronous. You need to be loose on deadlines for certain things, and you need to be tight on other things. And so let's talk about some of the loose things first. You can start a conversation in March and continue that conversation throughout the summer so that there's a place for people to put thoughts and ideas over the summer. Nobody's required or expected to read it. Nobody's required or expected to answer anything. But having a place where you can put ideas and have a place to communicate with your peers is incredibly powerful. So that is a great, great way to do that. Some things that you need to be tight on. So we need to have a survey out to staff, and the survey needs to be completed by a specific day, but you can do that at any point. Another thing you need to be tight on is you need to do bloodborne pathogen training, and we'll probably have some additional kind of training about the coronavirus or something like that coming in the future. But you need to have that kind of training done at a specific time. So you need to be tight on that. However, you can open that up pretty early and let that happen at times when people are comfortable and ready to do it. So then think about all the different things that you could be doing. If we've got an event coming up in the spring and we want to start brainstorming and thinking about it, the great thing about a tool like Basecamp is you can create this own little project for that thing and have it ongoing. And then you can see the timelines and what things you needed to do at different times, which can be really powerful. And sometimes you get overwhelmed with all the things that have to be done. And so when you can be loose about when things are due that are not as important, it's really a stress reliever for people that they don't have to, you know, if you don't have to do it right now, then that's okay. And, you know, it's like email has turned into this thing where you have to respond right away or else you're not doing your job or something like that. It's crazy. It doesn't need to be that. Email is asynchronous to begin with. It should be when you get to it. And so everybody should have a time in their day when they do email, and it should not be constantly open, constantly referring to it. That's just not a healthy way to do that asynchronous type of activity. So you can set up ways for people to give thoughts and feedback in their own time instead of everybody at a meeting all at once. So if you want to have a principal, you know, district leaders getting principals together and discussing something, you post the question in one of these asynchronous tools and you allow everybody to give their feedback on that question. And that's how it works instead of, you know, getting everybody around the table and hashing it out there. That's horribly ineffective and nobody enjoys those meetings anyway. And so there's a lot that can be decided. So quick example that I think is really funny right now, actually, is we're trying to change our dress code in our district to be less discriminatory towards girls and minorities. And so we did a lot of work around that. And ironically, one of the huge problems was the idea of people wearing hoods because it would cover their face. Now we're going back to school and everybody's wearing masks. And I just find that hilarious how hard we worked and how many meetings we had to discuss that one issue of, you know, even getting to the point where we said the hood has to be behind the ear so you can see the ears. And that's how prescriptive we got about it. And now everybody's intentionally covering up their faces so you can't see anything. And I find that funny, but I think about all the time that we wasted doing that. And when we changed that from having everybody in the room talk about it to having everybody giving feedback in an asynchronous manner, we gave people 2 weeks to get their thoughts, talk to teachers, talk to students, talk to other staff. And then we brought all that information back together. The answer became very, very clear, because sometimes when you're synchronously talking about things, somebody brings something up and you're like, oh, I have to stop that from happening. And that opportunity isn't available. And so doing it asynchronously makes it so that everybody can give what they really feel, and then you can make a decision. And what we learned was that one person really cares about hoods, nobody else does, but that person knows how to get everybody else on board with them. And once that person wasn't in the room having that conversation, hoods were okay very quickly. And it was just fascinating to see how that kind of discussion changed when we did it asynchronously, because the truth came out much easier. Not all conversations are that way. And sometimes you do need to meet in person to iron out the difficulties.
It's an interesting example of kind of shifting the patterns of influence. You know, if you're discussing something in a large, you know, whole faculty meeting setting, there are certain personalities that love that setting. They would love to have the stage. They would love to have the floor and control the airtime and make their voice heard. And other people who might have very intelligent things to say, but just don't want to do it in front of everybody. Like, we see very different patterns of participation and input when we do things asynchronously. And I have to think that while that will be an uncomfortable shift for some people, it probably will be one that results in higher quality input. You know, because as you said, when people have 2 weeks to think about where they stand on something, that's much better than, all right, does anybody want to raise their hand and make this meeting longer? Or does everybody just want to kind of go with whatever the first talkative person said?
Yeah, well, and that it also allows the voices that have traditionally been silenced to have a voice. And so that could be that, you know, the minority group, whoever that is in the school, they don't get their opinion to come out very much, but doing things asynchronously gives them an opportunity to do that. And that's what I think is really powerful, is that, you know, I had a teacher who was incredibly thoughtful, gave great feedback and ideas, but she refused to speak in a meeting. And it took me a long time to figure out why, but it was because, one, She knew there were teacher bullies who, if she said the wrong thing, they would come down on her. She just did not want to deal with that. And two, it took her a long time to process. And so she would come to me after the meetings and say, well, here's what I think. And they were brilliant ideas, very well thought out. She had all the details. It was awesome. But, and I would ask her, why didn't you just say that in the meeting? And she said, well, I didn't think of it then. And then once I learned that, you know, I gave her opportunities to do that through our asynchronous platform. And she was able to start talking more, give her opinions. And she was able to be very succinct, but you knew that there was detail behind that. And it was really powerful because she made an impression on the school that would not have been felt had we only made those decisions in an open meeting. So there's value to it and there's opportunities. You know, the people who are, who want that to always be talking in meetings, they're going to struggle because they really appreciate that. And it's not that they're bad. It's just that that's what their personality is. And it's okay for them to experience that.
Yeah, it is okay. It's okay for those power dynamics to shift a bit. And yeah, in some cases, probably overdue. Jethro, I wanted to ask you your thoughts on the idea of kind of the feeling of unity, right? Like there are discussions that can be had in writing. You know, we can have a forum or an online app where we discuss things and make decisions. But what are your thoughts on the feeling that we get from coming together and the sense of unity and the kind of, you know, almost the kind of rah-rah, you know, bringing people together, the, you know, that kind of intangible but very visceral kind of like, all right, we're in this together, that typically we do build face-to-face. And I appreciate your comment earlier that we can't just necessarily do the same thing in a different format. Like, you know, this, the same kind of staff meeting on Zoom is not necessarily the best answer, but what are some things that we can do to really create that sense of unity and common vision, common mission, common purpose that we just pick up from that face-to-face time that we're used to having with staff?
Well, I think that unity feeling that you're talking about, the rah-rah, let's do it, is really mostly fake. And the reason I say that is because I read this book by David Goggins called Can't Hurt Me, I listened to the audiobook, which I think is way better than the regular book.
It's a great audiobook. Yeah, I listened to that.
Very good. And he said motivation is worthless. It doesn't do anything because motivation will get you, you know, one foot in front of the other for about 10 steps. And then as soon as it gets hard, you're going to give up. And the thing you added to the end of that question is what really gets us unified, is when we have a common vision, common mission, and common values. Those things can and do happen asynchronously and when people are not physically together. It's very possible to do that. You clearly, Justin, are good at that because you don't go to every single school of people who follow you and support them, but you unite them through a vision, things like your 500 classrooms and the other things that you do to build that vision and that mission make people want to be part of what you're doing. And I'm telling you, principals who are listening and other school leaders who are listening, you have that power to do that as well. And you have to use that power to get people unified around a vision for your school. And if your vision for your school is, let's just be another school and get kids to move through so that they graduate high school, you're not going to cut it. You have to say, this is what we believe, this is what's important, and do that work to make sure that you show that you believe those things. That's going to motivate, inspire, and unify people. When you can do that, synchronously or asynchronously, you're going to have a school that matters and a school where people feel like they belong, where they want to do something. I want to go back to this Rob Carroll guy that I was talking about before, because he is an amazing example of that, because he was at the same school for years and he would do all kinds of things to get people to rally behind this vision of what he had in mind for the kids. But it wasn't just his, it was everybody's. And so other people came up with ideas and they did different things that were good for the kids they were serving. And that's what you really need to focus on. If you can get people rallied behind that vision, you can make them feel like they are unified and they can do it. And so a couple tips to be able to do that. Number one, you as a principal have to be clear on what you want from your school. And here's the way I like to phrase that. especially now, I think this is more critical than ever. Kids have a choice. Parents have a choice on what to do with their kids, especially now. Why would anyone want to come back to your school specifically? And you've got to figure out what makes your school special so that everybody who's in your boundaries wants to come to your school. Or if you're a charter school, everybody who can wants to go to your school. If you're a private school, what? Why would people want to pay for you to do things virtually? Like, you've got to figure that out and be clear about it. And when you're clear about it, you'll be able to transfer that to your teachers and staff, and they'll be clear about what really matters at your school. And so in the reopening schools workshops that I've been doing this summer, which have been just amazing to see what people are doing, I want you to try and think about what everybody is saying is most important. And I promise you, it is not academics. It's not at all. When I make them really think hard about what matters, they never say academics matters. Nobody does, because we all know that that is a total farce. We know that the students' standardized test scores don't matter anything besides making it easy for the state to measure how well we're doing. That's all that it matters for. We're finally at a point where we have to really say, why would somebody want to come back to our school? So ask yourself that question. And if you can't think of an answer besides academics, you're going to lose a lot of kids. That's just all there is to it. They're going to homeschool. They're going to go to a different program. They're going to transfer to another school. And there are lots of options out there for them to go to. And so you've got to figure out, what is it that makes our school special? When you do that, Justin, I think you're going to be able to get people unified and rallied around a vision that they can be excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm thinking, yeah, especially of any tuition-based school that's having to make the case in a different way now for, you know, the value that we provide. And we're realizing, you know, as much as people do rely on kind of the childcare effect that in-person schooling has, if we're really honest with ourselves about why people choose to send their children to our schools, it's not really that. I mean, I think it would be a very difficult argument to make that any parent is paying tuition simply for the childcare. You know, there are lots of childcare options out there, many of which would be, you know, more affordable or just easier to work around your particular work schedule, if that's what it's really about. But it's really about something else. You know, people are sending us their children because of a resonance with their mission, with our mission. And this is a time unlike any other when we need to be clear on what that is and how we're fulfilling on that mission, even if some of the logistics are different, even if we're not meeting in person. So I appreciate that focus on really the core, the essentials, the mission and the purpose. And as we think about what needs to be done, you know, the question of what do we always do, which is normally our go-to, you know, well, how do we organize open house? Well, what we always do is, you know, that's not the right frame of reference anymore. I think the mission, the purpose, the values really need to be the North Star when it comes to those kinds of decisions. Just knowing that the way we've always done things is not going to be our touchstone anymore. Appreciate that. Yeah. Well, let's wrap up if we could by talking a little bit more about what you see principals needing, because this is a time when a lot is flowing downhill. And I know we have statements in our profession about what flows downhill. We know mandates flow downhill. Plumbers also have statements about what flows downhill. And I think there's a tendency for overwhelming news, for bad news, for mandates, for unfunded mandates, for impossible to implement mandates, to just kind of get passed on from maybe state officials or county officials to superintendents. And then there's a temptation for superintendents to say to principals, well, all your schools are different, so you figure it out. What are some things that we need to really be mindful of as district leaders, given the situation that principals find themselves in and the demands of the moment? How do we have empathy for the needs of principals during this time? And how do we bring them together toward a common mission at the larger district level? Thoughts on that?
Yeah, so a couple thoughts. First, I want to speak to principals, though, which is, no matter what happens, you're the one holding the bag when the plan hits the road, right? You're the one who's standing there saying, here's what we're doing. So you as a principal need to have your own plan already. Like, you've got to have a plan of how we're going to do things, how we're going to communicate. And you can't control a lot of things. I totally get that. But you still have to have a plan because you're the one who's holding the bag. As a district leader, you got to recognize that your principals are holding the bag and they're the ones who are going to be stuck with whatever decisions you make, having to talk to families. And some of that may filter up to the district level, but likely it's really going to fall on the principal's shoulders of having to hold that burden, which is a lot. And so what do principals need? One, they need to make their own plan. And two, they do need that empathy. The way that that I learned about this a long time ago was that districts standardize and schools customize. And so as a district, you need to be rigid enough in your plans that it's very clear to principals what they need to do and what their responsibility is. And you need to let them do their thing with their schools. You put them there for a reason. You need to trust them to do well with whatever resources you give them and give them as many resources as you can to help them to be successful. It's not enough to just say, you figure it out. You have to say, here are the things that we have in place that are required. And here are the things that you must do, and everything else, we're gonna let you make a decision on. But you can't come back later and say, oh, that thing we said you could make a decision on, you actually can't make a decision on that. You've got to be clear enough up front that they have the confidence to go forward and make their own plans. And that takes a lot of work at the district level, and it's not easy. And when I was in a district level position, we would give advice and support and help to school leaders. But ultimately we knew that they were the ones who had to go and carry that out. So if we weren't clear on what they needed to do, then it just wasn't going to happen. And I want to talk about one situation where we're trying to get a school to do some co-teaching. And we said, co-teaching is really valuable, really important. It can be beneficial. And we're going to provide this support to help you figure out how to make it work in your school. And the mistake that we made was that we didn't talk about how important it was to determine the ability of those two teachers to work together. And that is like 90% of it, because if they don't work well together, then it's not going to do well. And so we didn't emphasize that as something that was a requirement to think about that. And so they said, okay, district requirement, do this, but you didn't tell me how to do this. So I'm going to do it however I want. And I'm going to put these two teachers together. And guess what happens? That program can totally fail because you didn't give clear guidance. So what we should have said is, you need to put two teachers together who have the same vision for what school can be, who have the same ideas about kids being successful, that they believe kids with special needs and everybody else can all be successful. And it's okay to take time for that to happen. If they believe that, then they can move forward. These two teachers didn't believe that. One teacher believed special ed kids should be over there, not with them. So every time they came into her class, she was like, "Ugh, here we go again." And it's not helpful. So you've got to be really clear up front about what matters and what needs to happen.
And that brings me back to the idea that you shared earlier of tight on some things, loose on everything else. You know, we cannot afford to be, nitpicky about everything. There is that autonomy, that customization that needs to happen at the school level. And it does need to be, a short list of things to be tight on. And Eloisa says, excited to begin to customize the model that our board approves for how to return. And lots of good thoughts being shared in the chat here. Sharia is mentioning the podcast. I will mention, if you have not listened to our podcast interview that we did about School X, I've got my proof copy printed out here. That is on our website. If you go to principalcenter.com/radio, you can hear all about School X, how principals can design a transformative school experience for students, teachers, parents, and themselves. Jethro, I wonder if we could end on that last note, thinking about ourselves as leaders, knowing that we will be doing a lot of our work asynchronously. What do we need to keep in mind in terms of our own needs? Because I hear from a lot of educators who are in education because it's a people business. You know, we thrive on that connection with other people. What do we need to keep in mind for our own well-being when it comes to maybe not being able to meet face-to-face, doing more virtually, doing more asynchronously? How can we engage in self-care and set ourselves up for success?
Yeah, you bring up a really good point about being people, right? And then getting our energy from the kids that were around. And so many times I talk to school leaders and teachers who are like, yeah, I just love being with the kids and it's so great. And you know, when somebody leaves the classroom and goes to administration, they're like, oh, I just miss the kids. Well, right now, that's a really dangerous place to be, because if you're getting your value from that, that's gonna be really challenging. And so I would encourage everybody to really get your value from someplace that is not going to go away. And so I personally get my value from knowing that I'm a son of God. And to me, that matters a lot. So because of that, I can withstand whatever comes my way, because my faith helps me be successful and strong in the midst of challenges. You've got to find a North Star for you. If you're a person of faith, that's great. If you're not, that's great too. You need to find what makes you successful, what makes you believe that you can do whatever you need to do. And that is what's going to help you be most successful in life. It's more than just, you know, having a glass of wine before you go to bed at night or whatever the case may be. You've got to go down deep and figure out what makes you valuable. And when you recognize what makes you valuable, then you can use that to help lift other people up. So going back to my faith, when I see myself as a son of God, I see everybody else as a child of God first and foremost. That gives me a lot more patience with kids, with teachers, with my supervisors. Gives me a lot more patience with everybody, because I see them as who they are first, not as who I think they should be. And so that piece of seeing yourself as who you think you should be, I think it was Danny Steele or Brad Johnson, one of those two guys on Twitter recently said, principals don't need to have all the answers, but they need to be comfortable with the questions that are asked. And that is a really important piece. You may feel like you have to have all the answers, but you don't. Nobody does. And anybody who says they do, they're lying. So you don't have to have all the answers. But if you do have comfort with the questions, then they're not going to be offensive. They're not going to tear you down. They're not going to be difficult. And you can say, it's okay that I don't know. And you can say, I don't know, to questions that you get, because you're not going to know, and that's going to be okay too. So I would really think what you need to focus on is taking care of yourself, finding what makes you valuable, and then putting your energies into that. And then all the other self-care tips that are out there, and there are thousands of them, do those things, exercise, drink water, get sleep, all that kind of stuff, that's all good. But if you don't know who you are and what makes you valuable in your core, then those things aren't really going to matter, and they're not going to change anything.
Yeah, very well said. One question that's coming in the chat here is if you could share a little bit, maybe a link about your workshop on reopening schools, because I know this idea of asynchronous culture essentials comes from that work that you've been doing. And the link, it looks like, is jethrojones.com/reopen. So that's in the chat if you're joining us live, and we will get you a link to that if you're watching the replay later, but jethrojones.com/reopen. There is a lot to think about in terms of logistics. What are some of the non-logistics that you prompt people to think through when it comes to that reopening plan? Just give us some of the maybe one or two of the greatest hits there, and then people can certainly check out how to be a part of that workshop if they'd like to.
Yeah, absolutely. We're starting a new workshop the first week in August, so now would be a great time to do that. I've done two in July and one in June, and what we're trying to do is create a one-page plan. And why is it one page? Because nobody's going to read more than one page, so don't make anything longer. And here's the thing. Parents do not need all the details. They just need confidence and communication. So they need to know that you've got a plan for going forward. And even if that plan is not perfect, which don't worry, it's not. Even if that plan has holes in it, don't worry, it does. They still need to know that you've got a plan for going forward. This goes back to that idea of why would someone want to come to your school? Because we care about your students, and we're going to do everything we can to make them be successful, even this year when things are just crazy. So parents need to know that you have a plan, and the plan needs to be very simple. And so if you go to that website, jethrojones.com/reopen, and then you put in your email there, you'll get some sample plans that have already been created. And admittedly, some of them did go a little bit longer than a page, but that's okay. I mean, you just can't have it be 30 pages. Nobody's going to read that. And you can't spell everything out already because nobody's going to pay attention to that because nobody cares about your whole plan. They only care about my plan for my family. And so your big, huge plan that you spent all this time on, nobody cares about that, not even your supervisor, right? They only care about how it affects them personally. So focus on that. So one of the key things that I think is really valuable from that session that we that we've done is this idea of instead of grouping kids by grade, we group kids by family. And so instead of saying, you know, here's each of your kids has a different teacher. If you have four kids, that can be pretty maddening. So you group kids by family instead so that they have one point of contact to go to. And that instills great confidence in families because they say, okay, if I only have to talk to Mrs. Martin, then I know that that's my person and I can just deal with that person. My kids may meet with other teachers and that's fine. But if that is my point person, then I have one person as a parent to worry about. And so I think that that is really valuable. Making changes like that, that don't really matter because it doesn't matter who the kids are with for communication. It matters that they can communicate. Little things like that, I think, can go a really long way. So I'd love to have you check that out, jethrojones.com/reopen.
Wonderful. Yeah, I've heard many great things about the work that people are doing in that workshop and the guidance that they're getting to focus on the right things. All right. Well, I want to thank everyone for joining us today. I want to thank Heather for being on our panel and everyone who participated in the chat. We do this every month. This is the Instructional Leadership Directors Roundtable. And if you are if you got an invitation, you are a member, and I want to encourage you to invite members of your senior leadership team. So if you're a head of school and you think really our VP of academics should be on here or our dean of students should be on here, if you are a superintendent and you think, you know what, really our assistant superintendent needs to be on here, please feel free to share these. We intentionally set this up on its own webpage so that you just get a link and you can share that with anybody in your kind of leadership cabinet who needs to access that. There's not a password or anything. We just want to make it easy for you to be here and participate. And we will announce our August guest shortly. But I want to thank you, Jethro, for being here, for setting aside the time and for sharing your wisdom with us. It's been a pleasure to speak with you again.
My pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity. It's always great to talk with you and good to see you again, Heather. It's been a while, so I'm glad that we got to say hello again as well.
All right. Well, again, thank you, my friend, and we will talk soon. Everyone, take care and have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.